With all the paperwork done and all the problems of the village solved, I did what anyone in my position would do. I took a nap. Welcome to the rough-and-tumble world of colonial village ombudsmanning. It's possible it's done differently elsewhere, but if it is, I don't want to know. I woke up in time to see Savitri closing up the office for the day. I waved goodbye to her, and after a few more minutes of immobility, hauled my own ass out of the chair and through the door on the way home. Along the way, I happened to see the constable coming toward me on the other side of the road. I crossed the road, walked up to the constable, and kissed my local law enforcement officer full on the lips.
"You know I don't like it when you do that," Jane said after I was done.
"Well, you don't like it when I kiss you?" I asked.
"Not when I'm on the job," Jane said. "It erodes my authority."
I smiled at the thought of some malfeasant thinking Jane, a former Special Forces soldier, was soft because she kissed her husband. Ooh, the ass-kicking that would ensue would be terrible in its magnitude. However, I didn't say that. "Sorry," I said. "I'll try not to erode your authority anymore."
"Thank you," Jane said. "I was coming to see you anyway, since you didn't return my call."
"I was incredibly busy today," I said.
"Savitri briefed me on just how busy you were when I called back," Jane said.
"Whoops," I said.
"Oops," Jane agreed.
We started walking in the direction of our home.
"What I was going to tell you is that you could expect Gopal Boparai to come by tomorrow to find out what his community service would be. He was drunk and disorderly again. He was yelling at a cow."
"Bad karma," I said.
"The cow thought so, too," Jane said. "It butted him in the chest and sent him through a shop window."
"Oh, is Go okay?" I asked.
"Scratches," Jane said. "The pane popped out. Plastic. Didn't break."
"This is the third time this year," I said. "You should be up in front of the actual magistrate, not me."
"That's what I told him, too," Jane said. "But he'd be up for a mandatory 40 days in the district jail, and Shashi is due in a couple of weeks. She needs him around more than he needs jail."
"All right," I said. "I'll figure out something for him."
"How was your day?" Jane asked. "Besides the nap, I mean."
"I had a Chengalpet day," I said. "This time with a goat." Jane and I chatted about our day on our walk home, like we do every day on our walk home, to the small farm we keep just outside the village proper. As we turned onto our road, we ran into our daughter Zoe, walking Babar the Mutt, who was typically deliriously happy to see us.
"He knew you were coming,"
Zoe said, slightly out of breath.
"Took off halfway down the road. Had to run to keep up."
"Nice to know we were missed," I said. Jane petted Babar, who wagged up a storm. I gave Zoe a peck on the cheek.
"You two have a visitor," Zoe said. "He showed up at the house about an hour ago, in a floater."
No one in town had a floater. They were ostentatious and impractical for a farming community. I glanced over to Jane, who shrugged as if to say, "I'm not expecting anyone." "Who did he say he was?" I asked.
"He didn't," Zoe said. "All he said was that he was an old friend of yours, John. I told him I could call you, and he said he was happy to wait."
"Well, what does he look like, at least?" I asked.
"Young," Zoe said. "Kinda cute."
"I don't think I know any cute guys," I said. "That's more your department, teenage daughter." Zoe crossed her eyes and gave a mock sneer.
"Thanks, 90-year-old dad. If you had let me finish speaking, you would have heard the clue that tells me you might actually know him, which is that he's also green."
This got another shared glance between me and Jane. CDF members had green skin, a result of modified chlorophyll that gave them extra energy for combat. Both Jane and I had had green skin once. I was back to my original hue, and Jane was allowed to choose a more standard skin tone when she changed bodies.
"He didn't say what he wanted?" Jane asked Zoe.
"Nope," Zoe said. "And I didn't ask. I just figured I'd come find you and give you advance warning. I left him on the front porch."
probably sneaking around the house by now, I said.
Doubtful, Zoe said. I left Hickory and Dickory to watch him.
I grinned. That should keep him in one place, I said.
My thought exactly, Zoe said.
You are wise beyond your years, teenage daughter, I said.
Makes up for you, 90-year-old dad, she said.
She jogged back to the house, Babar padding behind. Such attitude, I said to Jane. She gets it from your side.
She's adopted, Jane said, and I'm not the smartass in the family.
These are details, I said, and took her hand. Come on, I want to see just how scared shitless our guest is. We found our guest on the porch swing, watched intently and silently by our two Oban. I recognized him immediately. General Rybicki, I said. This is a surprise. Hello, Major, Rybicki said, referring to my former rank. He pointed to the Oban. You've made some interesting friends since the last time I saw you. Hickory and Dickory, I said. They're my daughter's companions. Perfectly nice, unless they think you're a threat to her. And then what happens? Rybicki asked.
It varies, I said.
But it's usually quick. Wonderful, Rybicki said. I excused the Oban. They went off to find Zoe. Thank you, Rybicki said. Oban make me nervous.
That's the point, Jane said.
I realize that, Rybicki said. If you don't mind me asking, why does your daughter have Oban bodyguards?
They're not bodyguards, they're companions, Jane said. Zoe is our adopted daughter. Her biological father is Charles Boutin.
This got a raised eyebrow from Rybicki. He was of sufficiently advanced rank to know about Boutin.
The Oban revere Boutin, but he's dead. They have a desire to know his daughter, so they sent these two to be with her.
And this doesn't bother her, Rybicki said.
She grew up with Oban as nannies and protectors, Jane said. She's comfortable with them.
And it doesn't bother you, Rybicki said. They watch and protect Zoe, I said. They help out around here. And their presence with us is a part of the treaty the Colonial Union has with the Oban. Having them here seems like a small price to pay for having them on our side.
That's true enough, Rybicki said, and stood up.
Listen, Major, I have a proposition for you.
He nodded to Jane.
For both of you, actually. What is it? I asked.
Rybicki motioned with his head toward the house in the direction Hickory and Dickory just went.
I'd rather not talk about it where those two might hear, if it's all the same. Is there some place we can talk privately?
I glanced over at Jane. She smiled thinly. I know a place, she said.
We're stopping here? General Rybicki asked as we pulled up short, halfway across the field. You asked if we had some place where we could talk privately, I said. You've now got at least 5 acres of grain between us and the next set of ears, human or Oban. Welcome to privacy, colonial style. What kind of grain is this? General Rybicki asked, pulling out a stalk.
It's sorghum, Jane said, standing next to me.
Babar sat next to Jane and scratched his ear. It sounds familiar, Rybicki said, but I don't think I've ever actually seen it before. It's a staple crop here, I said. It's a good crop because it's heat and drought tolerant, and it can get pretty hot around here in our summer months. People here use it for a bread called bakri and for other things.
Bakri,
Rybicki said, and motioned toward town. These folks are mostly from India, then.
Some of them, I said.
Most of them were born here. This particular village is 60 years old. Most of the active colonization here on Huckleberry is on the Clemens continent now. They opened it up around the same time we arrived.
So there's no tension about the subcontinental war, Rybicki said, with you being American and them being Indian.
It doesn't come up, I said. People here are like immigrants everywhere. They think of themselves as Huckleberries first and Indians second.
In another generation, none of it will matter. And Jane's not American anyway. If we're seen as anything, we're seen as former soldiers. We were a curiosity when we arrived, but now we're just John and Jane with the farm down the road. Rybicki looked at the field again. "I'm surprised you farm at all," he said. "The two of you have real jobs."
"Farming is a real job," Jane said. "Most of our neighbors do it. It's good for us to do it, too, so we can understand them and what they need from us."
"I meant no offense," Rybicki said.
"None taken," I said, interjecting myself back into the conversation. I motioned to the field.
"We've got about 40 acres here. It's not a lot, and not enough to take money away from the other farmers, but it's enough to make the point that the concerns of New Goa are our concerns, too. We've worked hard to become New Goans and huckleberries ourselves."
General Rybicki nodded and looked at his sorghum stock. As Zoe had noted, he was green, good-looking, and young, or at least gave the appearance of youth, thanks to the CDF body he still had. He'd looked 23 years old for as long as he had it, even though his real age was some number over 100 by now. He looked younger than me, and I was his junior by 15 years or more. But then, when I left the service, I traded my CDF body for a new unmodified body, based on my original DNA. I looked at least 30 by now. I could live with that.